The Exchange Podcast is brought to you in part by your university system, including Granite State College, Keene State College, Plymouth State University, and the University of New Hampshire. Visit usnh.edu/yours to learn more.
The Exchange Podcast also gets support from the New Hampshire Chiropractic Association, an organization of professionals providing a non-invasive, non-surgical approach to healthcare, tailoring treatment plans to meet individuals' needs. Learn more at nhchiropractic.org.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. America will soon enter a new phase in its COVID-19 vaccination efforts. The mass vaccination clinics and long lines at sites will start to wind down, switching to a smaller, more personal approach as health professionals try to reach the vaccine hesitant and vaccine resistant. Today in The Exchange, what vaccine hesitancy looks like here in the Granite State and ways public health workers are reaching out to this group. Exchange listeners, we welcome your questions as always. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org and our phone number is 800-892-6477. We have three community health leaders from around New Hampshire this hour, but we're going to begin with the UNH Survey Center, which polled Granite Staters on vaccine hesitancy a couple weeks ago. With us now to kick off the show is Tracy Kearns. She's the center's assistant director. Tracy, welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you for having me.
So what did your most recent survey find out about how New Hampshire people are feeling about whether they're going to get a vaccine or not?
So our numbers have been holding pretty steady since we started asking about vaccine uptake. And most recently, we have 2/3 of the state have already received at least one dose. And 3/4 of the state have either received a dose, scheduled an appointment, or say that they are going to get a vaccine. And the numbers of folks who say that they probably won't or almost certainly will not get a vaccine has been holding mostly steady since we started polling in December on this.
So 25% of people overall here in the Granite State say probably will not get a vaccine or definitely will not get a vaccine. Have those numbers changed at all since December, the last time you polled people on this, Tracy?
So we took a look at some of the changes that have happened since December. There has been a small change. In December, it was 31% who said they definitely wouldn't or probably would not get a vaccine, along with 8% who did not know. We currently sit at 22% and 1% who don't know. And when looking at change from December to now, a small portion, probably about 15 or 16%, have changed their opinion from probably or definitely will not to haven't actually said that they've scheduled an appointment, received a dose, or that they will be.
Oh, wow. So there is some shifting there, it sounds like.
There is some shift, but it's small. And we're talking small numbers that might change the percentage by 1% or 2% overall. But it is something to grab at.
What are the differences, Tracy, between the probably nots and the definitely nots?
Well, when we look at the 22% from our most recent poll, 18% of those are the almost certainly will not get vaccinated. So they make up a much larger percentage of those who are pretty steadfast in their hesitancy.
Interesting. And what kinds of people, Tracy, are more likely to be in that group, the almost certainly nots?
The almost or probably nots are mostly Republicans, folks who voted for Trump, and people with a high school education or less. Are far more likely to say that they are probably or definitely not going to get the vaccination.
Any regional differences that jumped out at you, Tracy, with this survey data?
There's a couple. So the Connecticut Valley area, the more rural western part of the state, and also in the Manchester area. And it probably speaks to the different types of demographics that are in those areas for decisions to not get vaccinated. So those who identify as conservative and what and more rural areas in the western part of the state.
Anything else, Tracy, that's just jumped out at you about the information that you gathered from your polling that kind of you looked at and went, oh, wow, that's interesting?
Well, the large majority of those people who have decided or who say that they probably will not or are definitely not going to get the vaccine, 80% of them say that they don't trust that the vaccine will be safe. And another 56% of them believe that they don't that it won't be effective at stopping them from getting COVID-19. So there's a large proportion that just don't believe the vaccine is safe. When we do look at what factors might influence whether or not they will get the vaccine, we ask them what things might make a difference to increase their likelihood. In the top two areas where people had a little bit of movement was that if their personal doctor advised them to receive the vaccine, as well as if it were required by employer. 12% and 15% respectively on each of those said that that would make them more likely to get the vaccine. And so since we've seen some movement from December to now in people who are hesitant, who have changed their opinion, these would be the areas that I think would be worth focusing on to try to get those additional people who may be willing to be swayed to get the vaccine.
Okay, so the influence of doctors and employers, and we'll definitely talk about that with our guests for the full hour. What are you going to be tracking next on this, Tracy, at the Survey Center? Are you going to be continuing to look at sort of opinions around vaccinations?
Absolutely. We plan to continue going forward with these questions as long as it is still happening in the state. We also follow the trends in the news of what's happening and are always adding additional questions to be able to dig deeper into the adults in the state to get a sense of their feelings about opening up the economy, vaccines, how they plan to live their life as we're going forward.
Well, Tracy, it's really good to talk to you, and we'll check back with you for sure.
Oh, thank you so much.
That's Tracy Kearns. She's the Assistant Director of the UNH Survey Center. And listeners, we are talking about efforts to reach the vaccine hesitant in New Hampshire, and we'd love to hear from you. Our number is 800-892-6477, and our email is exchange@nhpr.org. If you've been uncertain about whether to get vaccinated yourself, or if you're having these conversations about vaccine hesitancy among your own friends and your own family, again, we'd love to hear from you. It's 800-892-6477. Email us, exchange@nhpr.org. With me for the hour is Dr. Marie Elizabeth Ramos, family physician and activist, advisor for Healthcare Voices of New Hampshire. She also oversees the Lighthouse NH, which engages communities of color in public health and wellness. And Dr. Ramos, it's great to have you. Thank you for being with us.
Good morning. Pleasure is mine.
Also with us, Walter King, advisor for Healthcare Voices of New Hampshire, an independent grassroots organization that amplifies the voices of healthcare workers to improve healthcare for all. Walter has a PhD in virology and molecular biology and worked for 30 years in research and development. Walter, welcome back. Nice to have you.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And also with us, Chris Van Bergen-Budo, Director of Workforce and Public Health Programs for the North Country Health Consortium. And Chris, thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Good morning. I'm happy to be here.
Well, all of you, before we get into why some people are hesitant or resistant, as we heard from Tracy, Dr. Ramos, the big picture, please, first off. Why is it so important that as many people as possible get vaccinated against COVID-19?
That's a great question, and I get that a lot from my patients and on various platforms. You know, everybody has what we call COVID fatigue. We've been enduring and living in a survivalist mentality for over a year now. Isolation, we've seen on multiple levels, does do have negative effects on our mental health, our well-being. People are tired. We want to get back to a new sense of normalcy, whatever that looks like as we emerge from this pandemic. So the simple answer to this is we want to quickly and effectively return back to a sense of community as we know it. And we're going to have to define that in new ways post-COVID. But of course, the other thing is that we're trying to prevent deaths, and we're trying to prevent, from a public health standpoint, severe adverse outcomes from COVID-19. Because we are experiencing this pandemic live, this is new and novel. We don't know what the long-term complications are if we are infected. And so the public health reason is that we want to prevent deaths. We want to make sure that people stay safe. And if there is something that we have that is evidence-based, that is proven to be effective at particularly slowing down the rates of poor outcomes and severe hospitalization stays, and hopefully long-term adverse effects, then that is our number one priority for public health safety and public good.
And Dr. Ramos, not getting vaccinated is often described as a choice. But when someone makes that choice with the COVID-19 vaccine specifically, how does that affect everyone else in society?
Yeah, you know, so one thing that COVID-19 has definitely showed us, and the Carsey Institute actually put out this Civic Health Index, sort of like a scoring card for the state recently, on how well Granite Staters feel part of a community. And we are, you know, we have this rugged individualism, spirit, which I so appreciate in the Granite State. But definitely one thing that we are recognizing and have to come to grips with is that we are more interconnected and more dependent on one another as community members than maybe we would feel comfortable with. The Institute with the Civic Health Index did show that as far as Granite Staters are concerned, our idea of community is a much smaller circle than maybe other communities are outside of the state, and even within the state, how we define community. And so to answer your question, my getting the vaccine is not only for my benefit, but it's also to help the community return back to a sense of resiliency and to regain buoyancy as we are starting to evolve and emerge out of this pandemic. So we have to think on a bigger scale. And the interesting thing I find as a physician scientist and kind of working with my patients and working with the community about their questions and their concerns is that there's this duality of one, understanding your role individually in getting the vaccine. What does this mean for each individual? But then also there's this sense of responsibility and almost obligation of a sense of thinking about things in a bigger level, a bigger scale. What does this mean for my neighbor and their children who may have parents that for one reason or another are immunocompromised and they can't send their kids to school unless everyone is creating that kind of cocooning effect that we'll talk about later. So there's this duality that we have to wrestle with. And I think we've been seeing this live over the last several months throughout the rollouts of the vaccines.
Well, and one more question about this, Dr. Ramos, and then I want to bring Chris and Walter in for sure. But just to help us understand the importance of vaccination for everyone. Dr. Thomas Friedan, the former director of the Centers for Disease Control, said potentially more dangerous variants of the virus developing overseas remain the wild card. Introduction of such a variant could change the equation for any state with large pockets of unvaccinated people, he said. That's why getting as many people vaccinated as possible has to remain the goal. So is it the case, Dr. Ramos, that, you know, let's say large numbers of people don't get vaccinated, they catch these variants that could, in fact, pierce the vaccine protection of other people? I mean, is that what we're talking about here?
And that's a great question and a very astute observation. And, you know, this is the difficulty in managing COVID-19. And so I oftentimes, you know, we have to think about things that are common to us. So if we compare, for instance, COVID-19 to the flu, which it was in the beginning of this pandemic, stark variances, stark differences. Once a year for the flu, for instance, we have to get a flu vaccine. And the reason is because the flu is smart and it changes and mutates, and we have to find a vaccine that can help protect for the following season. Now, it has been a little over 1 year, and we now have several variants and mutations of the COVID-19 virus. And so what this means is that this virus, it adapts and it changes at an alarmingly quick rate. Now, what has been very reassuring for me as a physician is that the COVID vaccines do show some protection with these variants. And so for those who even have had COVID before, I stress to them that it's still important to get vaccinated because we still don't know what the nature really of this virus is. And so you are completely right. We're getting vaccinated not only for the now, but we're getting vaccinated as we're starting to figure out, again, what is our new normal? And as we're trying to figure that out, we want to make sure that we're not only protecting ourselves now, but we're making sure that we're putting deposits in the bank to protect ourselves from these future variants that could potentially affect our communities again in a grander scale.
Well, Chris, I want to bring you in. What are some of the reasons that your patients say they're hesitant? What are you hearing over and over again from people in the North Country where you work?
Well, you know, we're hearing things that I think are not really surprising that we hear in other other pockets of the state and the country. And in truth, the CARSI study really pointed to it. First and foremost are questions about vaccine safety. There are folks who perhaps don't necessarily understand the history of the development, in particular, of mRNA vaccines, like the ones we see from Pfizer and Moderna that are being used in our country, who are concerned that the vaccines were developed too quickly and that we may not necessarily know what the long-term effects are of using something that was created quickly. Feels like overnight. When you really take some time to learn about how those vaccines were developed, of course, we know that that technology was in the works for a couple of decades, and that there's strong science to support safety, but it takes time for people to receive information and really sit on that for a minute as they make their very personal decisions about vaccination. The other space is efficacy. People are concerned that it might not be as effective. They are concerned that particularly as variants arise, they don't know whether they're going to need to be getting booster shots later on. They do liken it, as Dr. Ramos referenced, to the flu vaccine, and are concerned that, you know, it might end up being less effective, much like the flu vaccine is. We also hear folks really talk in terms of their disbelief that that COVID is itself as dangerous to community health or to individual health as it has been reported to be. For us, part of the challenge in that particular standpoint is that the North Country went many, many, many months without a single case of COVID. Maybe one of the benefits of living rurally is that we're naturally physically distanced. And so we just were somewhat isolated from a lot of the viral activity that was happening in the southern part of the state. And when people started presenting with COVID positive cases, they were not some of the most severe that had been seen in the state until we had some institutional outbreaks in nursing homes and prisons. So it became easy for folks to kind of encapsulate the COVID activity into these small pockets that didn't really apply to themselves. And it has reinforced a perception that perhaps COVID itself isn't as serious as it's made out to be.
Oh, that's interesting. And Walter, in your work with Healthcare Voices of New Hampshire and also just being active in Dover, what are you hearing among the people that you talk with and work with, Walter, about why they might be hesitant? Oh, I think we lost Walter. Okay, well, we will try to fix that in a moment. Dr. Ramos, anything that you would add to the list that Chris gave us? You know, people are nervous about safety, doubt that it's going to be effective. What other items would you add to that list of why people hesitate to accept this vaccine?
Sure. And, you know, just to bring a health equity perspective to things, you know, Healthcare Voices of New Hampshire, with me being on the advisory as well with Walter, we've done some listening and community input sessions just to understand, again, why there might be some resistance from even healthcare workers that may identify with historically excluded communities. And interestingly, there was a concern about longevity and economic considerations. Do I have the opportunity to even take the couple of days off that I might need to take off from work in order to recover from the vaccine? Or do I take my chances and continue to work? So there's this economic component that oftentimes I think we don't recognize. And then the other thing that I think is interesting from our community input sessions is wondering, because of the historical relationship between the medical systems and science in particular and our communities of color, this distrust or mistrust between the efficacy and validity of the science as it relates to communities of color. Of course, in New Hampshire, although we're mostly homogenous, fastest growing population within our state is our communities, our ethnic minorities, so to speak. And so I think that it's an important consideration that we need to validate that, you know, our medical system doesn't always get it right. But one thing I can say, and I reassure our participants with these sessions, is that New Hampshire's really trying to get this right and trying to address the concerns and issues, and also take ownership of the clear disparate outcomes and effects on our minoritized communities.
Well, and I definitely will have some more questions for you about that, Dr. Ramos, in just a moment. But let's go to our listeners. Again, our number is 800-892-6477. And our email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Maddie's calling from Nashua. Hi, Maddie, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, can you hear me?
Sure can. Thanks for calling in, Maddie.
Okay. I just wanted to tell you that I am fully vaccinated, and I work in a small office with like five or six other people, and every single one of them is vaccine hesitant. So I'm just wondering if there are any, like, say they're not too interested in like the fast, but are there any strategies that I can approach them with that, you know, might convince them to maybe get the vaccine, like any personal benefits? Because
Maddie,
it's concerning to me.
Sure. And why do they say they don't want the vaccine?
It's a number of reasons. I mean, they, first of all, I don't want to say a lot of them are conspiratorially minded, but they might have some, they may have been told some things about it that are untrue. I don't know exactly. But
well,
I've
thank you
tried
for calling.
Approaching them with the facts.
Yeah. Well, and Chris, I know that you have talked about the pseudoscience around these vaccines, and we're not going to repeat the claims here because we don't want to spread misinformation, but where does this information come from, and how hard is it to combat?
That is an excellent question, and I really want to applaud Maddie for seeking a pathway to shared understanding and finding a way to work positively with her coworkers. One of the things that we really focus on in terms of public health messaging is understanding that blame and shame is counterproductive. So what I mean by that is, if we come across a person who perhaps has formed their opinion based on bad information or unsupported information, and we criticize them for holding an opinion that we feel is wrong, generally that makes folks dig their heels in just a little bit harder, and it becomes harder to move the needle. What works really effectively, Maddie, is trying to understand what informed their opinion in the first place. So, you know, taking a moment to always speak respectfully and ask the questions thoughtfully and kindly. Your viewpoint is so different from mine. I'm really interested in understanding how you got there. Because what happens then is that you've opened a door to a respectful conversation where people can share their opinions, they can share the resources that have informed those opinions, and you can start to ask questions that perhaps start them thinking about what they're working with. The misinformation is really tough, Laura. One of the things that we're seeing that's quite challenging is that it's laid out very carefully so that it appears believable. There are terms that are used that are very much like the terms being used by our evidence-based resources from the CDC and the National Institutes of Health. Things sound scientific. For example, I recently, you know, read an article that spoke about the dangers of mRNA and or of RNA vaccines instead of mRNA vaccines. So the terms are close enough to one another to feel familiar, and it lends a sort of validity to the information. And they use scientific sounding terms that are maybe just a tiny bit off. And you know, it's easy to pick up the first resource. It's hard to combat it with the next resources. You have to undo learning that has happened. So I think, you know, Maddie, the best thing to do is, if you're going to engage your coworkers, start from a place of respect and a desire for shared understanding. It's also helpful to personalize the matter. People form their opinions based on their own personal filters. And so if you ask questions like, help me understand what this means in terms of safety for me. Or you help make them aware of the fact that you may not be able to do the same things together because of an unvaccinated status, but doing it in a way that's respectful of the fact that they've done their research and come to their conclusion. And so it feels very personal to them.
Well, Dr. Ramos, this is really interesting. I want to ask you about this as well. You know, blame and shame, Chris is saying, if you do that, people just dig in their heels. So how do you work around that?
That's great. You know, as a family doctor, this is what I do every day. It's motivational interviewing, right? And I think it's important to respect people's opinions and to respect where everyone is in their personal journeys, right? So this duality that I talked about earlier on of understanding what this means for us individually, and then putting this in the grander context that we're seeing on a day-to-day level, it's a jump, and it's not necessarily a way that, you know, most people think on a day-to-day basis. We tend to surround ourselves with people that think that are like-minded as well, and that can also cause we call it confirmation bias, right? That mm-hmm. we see what we want to see. And so one of the things that I think is important to recognize is that relationship and having a trustworthy person either be having been affected adversely by the infection has been a what we find, at least nationally, a big a proponent for people to change their minds about getting vaccinated. But the number one thing, as was stated earlier, that helps people to make that change in the decision-making process is talking to their family doctor. And so having a trusted family physician or primary care clinician be there at their side and walk with them through the process is the number one thing that has shown to make changes, which is why Healthcare Voices of New Hampshire came to be a trusted presence from a medical standpoint in the community so that people can get valid information from a source that they trust.
Well, there are links to both of your organizations on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, more on how public health professionals in the Granite State are reaching out to vaccine hesitant Granite Staters. We'll take your emails at exchange@nhpr.org and your phone calls at 800-892-6477. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, vaccine hesitancy. Why one quarter of Granite Staters say they probably won't or definitely won't get the COVID-19 vaccine. We're asking public health professionals about their efforts to increase vaccinations. Send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or call 800-892-6477. Tell us if you've been hesitant to get vaccinated. Tell us what's on your mind about that. Or if you've had conversations with coworkers or loved ones who don't want to get the vaccine, tell us how those conversations went. Once again, our email is exchange@nhpr.org. And our number is 800-892-6477. We're talking with Dr. Maria Elizabeth Ramos, family physician and activist, advisor for Healthcare Voices of New Hampshire. She also oversees the Lighthouse NH, which engages communities of color in public health. And also with us is Chris Van Bergen, director of workforce and public health programs for the North Country Health Consortium. And here's an email that just came in. Nina says, I myself am vaccinated, but have friends who are hesitant. Two reasons I have heard are recent childbirth and or breastfeeding and prior COVID infection providing immunity or risk of bad side effects from the vaccine. Can your guests speak on these issues? Nina, thank you. There's a lot there. And Dr. Ramos, let's take that middle part because I think that's really important. People saying, I already had COVID, so I'm immune, I'm good. How often do you encounter that? And I'm guessing that's not true. Prior COVID infection doesn't mean you're good.
Yeah, you know, I get that pretty often. And the Lighthouse holds a monthly Facebook Live for community members around varying subjects. And so that's a very common question. So the problem is that we have so many rapidly developing variants of the virus that are occurring. And so what we find, and this is what is very exciting to me as a physician scientist, I really hope Walter can join in with us to talk on the science side of this. But what's really exciting is that we're finding that the COVID-19 vaccines all have some level of protection, even with the variants that come across. Now, this is very important because what we are finding as well is that now in our state, the younger demographic populations are now starting to get more infections. And also, even though our hospitalization rates are going down, when they do get hospitalized, they are represented in a younger demographic. And so what this means is that we have caretakers of our elderly patients that are starting to come in. Our students are going to be going back to school, hopefully in the fall. And so we have these very much mixed milieus that are occurring. And so if we have variants and we're not protected against them at any level, even if it's maybe a theoretical level at this point, there's concern that we might actually return back and revert back as a community and need to consider lockdown again, you know? So there are so many moving parts when it comes to that. Very important to talk to our patients about that and our friends and family. I also, if I can, just address the breastfeeding and pregnancy question, which I do get a lot.
I'd like to hear about women of childbearing age. I've heard that they have some concerns. Go ahead, Dr. Ramos.
Wonderful. Yeah. So, you know, as a family doctor, I've delivered a thousand or so babies myself. And it's one of the joys that I have in medicine as well. And so, you know, one thing that we have found is that women who are breastfeeding, for instance, when they get the COVID-19 vaccine, as with other vaccines that we find, that immunity actually goes through the milk. And so we're actually providing immunity and antibodies to protect the infant when breastfeeding. So it doesn't cause any, genetic changes to the breast milk or to the baby. And so the risks are, almost nil that I can see from the research. For our mothers who are pregnant or our surrogates who are pregnant with child, we're seeing as well similar responses. As with anything, we need to be careful in the first trimester. We're still in the development stages from a research standpoint on this. But from what I see as a family physician who takes care of women and children, you know, second trimester, third trimester, unless otherwise advised by your family doctor or OBGYN, you know, you should be safe in getting vaccinated.
Lots of questions from our listeners. Let's go right back to them. Jamie's calling from Nashua. Hi, Jamie, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. Go ahead, Jamie.
Sure. I just want to give some perspective. I'm actually a healthcare worker. I own my own practice. And I, you know, what I think most concerning when I have a discussion about why I choose not to get vaccinated is that we've completely lost sight of how this is more so a health crisis. You know, my job and my practice as a healthcare practitioner is to, you know, not wait till there's symptoms, not put band-aids, not give pills, but in fact, you know, work prophylactically on wellness, on just being well. And I get discouraged about those that are rewarded for being vaccinated and have no accountability to health. I worry about, you know, the incentives for offering, for instance, Krispy Kreme donuts and, you know, alcoholic beverages if you show your vaccination card. So I'm worrying that we're just losing sight about the emphasis on health and wellness versus getting the vaccine and getting rewarded for continued practices of poor wellness, which ultimately lead to risk factors that are associated with COVID.
Sure. So would you categorize yourself, Jamie, as vaccine hesitant or vaccine resistant? So you might get it eventually or no way?
I think that's unfair to label it. I really do, only because we are learning so much every day. I think it's unfair to actually put yourself in any of those categories. I do trust science. I do trust that if you are healthy and you are young, and you know take steps towards reducing risk factors, that you should be able to handle this disease just fine. Now, I'm fully supportive, and I should make note of that, fully supportive of those that do have risk factors, especially over the age of 70, to get the vaccine. My parents have it, my in-laws have gotten it, and I'm fully supportive of that. So I think it's unfair to choose one of those labels, because I would say that sometimes leaves some question about whether you think it works at all, which I do believe it works very well for those in the vulnerable population.
Well, and I hear you on the Krispy Kreme donuts. Seems like an odd incentive for a choice that's supposed to be related to health. But thank you very much for calling, Jamie. And I want to throw this to both of you, Chris and Dr. Ramos, and also read an email from Jill, who says, I have a friend whose primary care physician, a holistic medical doctor, is herself not getting vaccinated and recommends that her patients also don't. How many primary care physicians are acting similarly, and what can be done about this? Both of you, Chris, you first. What do you think about the call we got from Jamie and the email we got from Jill about those who are focusing more on wellness and less on this sort of medical intervention of a vaccine?
Sure. You know, I think the points that Jamie makes about focusing on wellness are valid and important points. One of the things that we have really stressed in the public health space since the start of the pandemic is that there are multiple mitigation strategies that can keep our communities safe while the virus is moving its way around the world. And we refer to them often as part of a Swiss cheese model. And so really what that is you think about a slice of Swiss cheese, it has some holes in it, but it's mostly solid cheese. And if you have multiple slices of Swiss cheese and you lay them all together, the solid parts of some slices block the holes in other slices. And for all of the mitigation strategies that we're using during the pandemic to keep people safe, there are holes in those strategies, right? Masks, we know, are really helpful at preventing the spread of the virus, but some masks have gaps, and some masks are made of materials that allow viral particles to get through. And sometimes people don't wear their masks according to recommendations, so their nose isn't covered or their mouth may not be well covered. And so there are fail points in a mask strategy, but then we layer on top of that physical distancing, which gets you further away from the particles that are coming from someone's mouth or nose. And so the physical distancing covers up some of the holes in the mask. And vaccination is another one of those mitigation strategies that helps layer on protection for our communities. And then we have the other things like making sure that people are physically active, making sure they're eating a healthy diet. And so it does seem counterproductive if we offer, you know, rewards for use of mitigation strategies that don't promote health and wellness. And I think that is a really important point that Jamie has made there. At the end of the day, a decision to vaccinate is an incredibly personal decision. And people put a lot of those different layers of thinking into their decision about getting vaccinated. And I think ultimately we come back to this duality that Dr. Ramos has spoken of, that is part of this is about protecting yourself. And if you're young and very healthy and you practice a whole bunch of other mitigation strategies and you make the decision that a vaccine is not necessary because you've got other protections in place, that's an individual decision you make for yourself. We do know that there are young, very healthy people who have been absolutely ravaged by the disease. So it's not by any stretch a guarantee. But there's also this component about protecting our community. And we know that people who are wearing masks and practicing hand hygiene and physical distancing are helping to protect their community members, not just themselves. And the vaccine is another piece of that.
Sorry to jump in there, Chris. And I hear you on the other mitigation strategies. But at this point, who wants to stay away from others and keep wearing a mask, right? I mean,
That's the reason to get vaccinated. Protection, every strategy has a different layer of oomph, I sort of say. And the vaccine is a really very effective way to help us be able to peel back some of those other pieces, to be able to hug our grandparents and our grandchildren again, and to come back to things like Super Bowl parties and Memorial, you know, we're coming up on Memorial Day and the 4th of July and those family celebrations and get-togethers, and be able to take pictures together where our heads are close together and we're not wearing masks. If you take off those other mitigation strategies, the vaccination piece is something that you carry with you inherently.
I'll defer
to Dr. Ramos on the question about primary care providers, because I do think that's a really good one, but I'm not a clinician and don't in any way live in that space. But
To the point about wellness and, you know, there's been so much messaging, Dr. Ramos, about, you know, young, healthy people and, you know, if they get COVID, it won't be too bad. What do we know now about, A, those people in particular and whether they are vulnerable? And B, again, even if a young, healthy person gets COVID and doesn't have a problem, he or she could be helping to propagate the virus and some of these new variants. So I just want to kind of check in on that messaging with you, because that messaging was early in the pandemic, but we know more now about this.
Yeah, thank you so much. And thank you for Jamie for bringing up this alternative perspective, which is much needed. First of all, I am 100% a proponent for valuing wellness and holistic wellness. As a family physician, again, part of my training is to make sure that I understand my patients within their whole context. And we know that 80% of health and wellness happens outside of the doctor's office. And so definitely 100%, Jamie, we need to have systems that are in place that support and encourage all aspects of wellness and incentivize all aspects of wellness. With that, though, I do want to point something interesting that I inferred from Jamie's comment, is that somehow the concept of being vaccinated does not equate or correlate with the idea of wellness. And I would propose that, you know, we are all entitled to our opinions, but what history has shown is that wellness indeed, in fact, is part of making a decision of getting vaccinated. You are definitely correct that we have patients that are vastly unaffected from COVID, but still we have to recognize from the reality of it, we have lost more people in the United States from the COVID-19 infection than all of our major wars combined. in over just a little bit over a year. And so we are facing not just, you know, day-to-day trivialities or inconveniences, we're facing life and death. And that's particularly important with our communities of color. And so, you know, unfortunately, I've lost several colleagues and I've lost family members to the COVID-19 vaccine, or not the vaccine, to the COVID-19 infection, excuse me, who were healthy, who were young, who had a life ahead of them, and their lives were ripped away because of the COVID-19 vaccine, doing all of the right things, or excuse me, COVID-19 infection, excuse me, doing all the right things. So my question is, and this is the question that I pose to my patients, I do not, I cannot tell anybody what they can or cannot do. We are all entitled to our own decisions individually. However, we need to weigh the risks and the benefits of our decisions. And are we willing to take the risk of a possible, you know, poor outcome from COVID-19 infection versus the risk of getting a vaccine that now has shown to prevent hospitalizations and to prevent death, not only for myself, but for my community?
I'm sorry to hear about those losses for you, Dr. Ramos. Thank you for sharing that with us. It's tough to hear, but important. We have to take a very quick break. Coming up, we're going to talk more about efforts to reach the vaccine hesitant here in the Granite State, including how much the pause in Johnson & Johnson vaccinations hurt efforts to reach this group of people in particular. You can join us, too, with a phone call at 800-892-6477 or an email, exchange@nhpr.org. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, it's the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup. We'll cover some smaller but important changes to the state budget. Join us for the News Roundup with host Peter Biello, Friday morning, live at 9. Today, we're talking about vaccine hesitancy and what it looks like in the Granite State. And Exchange listeners, it's been great to hear from you with a phone call to 800-892-6477 or an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Chris Van Bergen, Dr. Marie Elizabeth Ramos, right back to our listeners. Rachel's calling from Nashua. Hi, Rachel. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. So we have an adult daughter who is absolutely does not want to get the vaccine. My husband and I have tried left, right, and center every tack we can think of, including, you know, get the news source and nothing seems to work, and it's very frustrating because A, she has had COVID, so she has had COVID. She's well. I don't want to get sick. I don't want to have a reaction, and it's kind of frustrating because we're older. We're fully vaccinated, but we can't have her around. We don't know that she A, and plus she could get sick again with the variants. She could be reinfected. And just kind of curious about how you really dig deeper into this.
Rachel, yeah, thanks for calling. And again, our guests have told us that just because you had COVID doesn't mean you're protected. Go ahead, Chris. I'd love to hear from you on this.
You know, one of the things that we talk about a fair bit in our space is how incredibly personal this conversation gets so quickly. And I think that's key to addressing the vaccine hesitancy is really what are the personal ramifications for you? One of the things that I know I've spoken with colleagues just in the last week about how when we as folks working in public health who are for sure proponents of vaccination hear about family members who are more hesitant or even resistant, it evokes real senses of anger and sadness and just frustration that you could be so close to someone who has such a different viewpoint. And I don't think that's unique to those of us working in public health. I think that's happening a lot all over our country and all over the state of New Hampshire, where family members hold really different opposing views about things related to COVID, vaccine being one of them. And I think we're making some hard decisions about how we engage with those family members and protect our own safety. And so I can really appreciate the caller's concern there, because at some point those decisions sound like things like, I can't have you in my home because you pose a risk to my health.
Wow, or, that's really hard, Chris.
You know, I'm not gonna travel with you. And what's really, it is really hard. And I think the thing that is super challenging about those decisions is that we want to trust the people we love. And so we want to believe you if you say, look, I've been really careful. I haven't gone anywhere in 2 weeks. So please, can we have this family gathering? You want to trust the people you love. But at the end of the day, it's not the human that's the concern. It's the virus the human may be carrying. And viruses really don't operate with any level of integrity. They really don't care how strong your intent is or how much you love one another. They'll body hop. It's what they do. And so I think coming back to that conversation of, I love you. I trust that you believe you're making good decisions, but the virus doesn't know what a good person you are. And I have to be protected against the virus is that hard conversation to have with family members and friends. And it absolutely evokes feelings of anger and sadness and frustration when your opinions are very different.
Wow. So another question I definitely want to get in before we close out the hour. Dr. Ramos, how much did the pause in Johnson & Johnson vaccinations hurt efforts to reach people who are nervous about the vaccine or hesitant about the vaccine to begin with? I saw a Kaiser Family Foundation poll just this morning that said nearly 1 in 5 unvaccinated adults changed their minds because of the Johnson & Johnson pause. So go ahead, Dr. Ramos.
Yes, Laura. You know, fear is a tremendously strong motivator, right? And it could be a motivator for, you know, for various reasons. And, you know, the fact of the matter is there's still more to be discovered, right? And we're in this period right now as a community of emerging from this terribly traumatic, life-altering event that has completely changed and turned our systems and ways of doing life upside down. And so we have to recognize that we're emerging from this state of, do I still need to be hypervigilant in this chronically hypervigilant state because of this pandemic? Or can I start to relax and start to embrace more of a trust? And so we're seeing this again live within the people that we love, right? And within our community. And so it's very natural to have that knee-jerk response. Here, I'm thinking about getting vaccinated. I have my appointment scheduled, and then a hit like Johnson & Johnson again. And the nuances on how the wording and the communications were put out, it could be misrepresented. And so just to make sure I am clear, that's why it's so important that you have a trusted family physician, primary care clinician, who is there to answer those questions, because nothing is 100%. The other thing I want to make sure that we understand too, particularly with the Johnson & Johnson communication, is that the amount of blood clots that happened within the total, you know, number of people that had been vaccinated from Johnson & Johnson was multitudes smaller than the risk that a person has when they take something like birth control pills, for instance. And so the reason, though, I think, and it's very normal for people to have this knee-jerk reaction of withholding again and turning back, is because of the novelty of this situation. And what I'm proposing, and what I think we need to start shifting as a community and as thought leaders, is we need to start shifting into a plane of normalcy, right? What does normalcy look like post-COVID? And part of that is making sure that we get vaccines in primary care offices, because that's where patients are going. And then also making sure that primary care offices are staffed and incentivized to deliver those vaccines. We do it all the time. And so it's a normal place where people can have those conversations and not feel pressured, which is, I think, the most important thing.
Well, both of you, we could have talked a lot longer. It'd be great to check in with you in a couple months and just see how this has gone over the late spring and summer. For now, though, we'll wrap it up. And Dr. Ramos, it was really nice to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Pleasure was mine. Look forward to speaking with you again.
That's Dr. Marie Elizabeth Ramos, family physician and activist, advisor for Healthcare Voices of New Hampshire. She also oversees the Lighthouse NH, which engages communities of color in public health and wellness. There's links to that on our website as well, nhpr.org/exchange. Chris Van Bergen, it was really good to talk to you too. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
That's Chris Van Bergen Budo, Director of Workforce and Public Health Programs for the North Country Health Consortium. Today's show was produced by Exchange Senior Producer Christina Phillips. A special note to our listeners today. After 25 years in the host chair, I will be stepping aside in mid-June to pursue other interests. Meanwhile, though, the show will go on. NHPR will continue to bring you live conversations at 9 with a chance for you to weigh in. We'll still be connecting with you, hearing from you about the issues that matter to the Granite State. So stay tuned for more information about that in the weeks ahead. Thanks, everybody, for being with us. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.